Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by M&A Moving Hauling, serving all of Central Iowa for your moving needs. Call 515-490-2640 and they'll send you a couple guys. Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart, Brian Myers, and it's been a fast week, hasn't it?
You know, they do seem to fly by. But
it seems that it happens the older I get, the faster they go. That's not a good sign,
yeah.
Brian.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it's like for you.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, pal.
You're welcome.
We're starting off already today. Oh, man.
So you went to Unfair.
I did. Deb and I went to the showing of Unfair at the theater there in Ames. And apparently, I found out that Bob Eshelman was there. I saw a guy down in the front, but I wasn't sure it was him.
Okay.
But anyway, I saw him post on Facebook the next day that after Debbie and I left, apparently there were some fireworks there at the theater.
Literal fireworks? Or
No,
figuratively.
No, it was, I guess...
I can't imagine Bob being in the midst of anything controversial.
Well, yeah. He reserves that kind of stuff for
online,
okay. or in print. You know, I think he's a pretty mild guy other than that. But anyway, apparently after we left the theater, and I remember Bob being in the front and telling everybody, you know, that if we wanted to meet, we needed to meet outside the theater, which is cool. So
sure.
You know, Debbie and I took off, but apparently there were some people out there. And I don't know if they were outside of the theater proper, but maybe kind of in the lobby area.
Uh-huh.
And I think some people from the theater were trying to chase them out, and that didn't go very well. And there were some people yelling at each other, and so I missed the whole thing.
Oh, so it wasn't actually people there protesting that, hey, we do like taxes, and we love the IRS. No. Okay. Completely unrelated then.
Well, Bob wondered if the owner of this particular theater may not have been terribly sympathetic to the politics of the film. But
probably being in Ames, that would be a good guess.
Yeah. Anyway,
that not.
Anyway, we were there and we missed the whole thing. I don't know. That's
well,
but that's the movie was good.
God's providence.
The movie was good.
He carried you guys away from that because, you know, you may have gotten fisticuffs.
I'd have been in jail, yeah.
Yeah,
I can see the headlines now.
No doubt.
Oh, man.
And I'd have been without a co-host. And that'd have been sad.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of people out there saying, oh, if only. So, hey, how'd your week go? Enough of this.
It went fine. We had kids have, my son had network play. I had extra 7 guys at my house. Which is always fun.
So is that why your eyes are bloodshot?
That's a good guess.
You haven't had any sleep for days?
Yeah, I had to remind them. We promised parents, we put them, you know, it's like it'll be a short evening or they'll get to bed at a decent time. And apparently decent means 2 o'clock in the morning. So.
Oh, that's early. For those guys, I bet that's early.
Probably.
I mean, they don't even start winding down until 3 or 4, do they?
If we let them, that certainly would be the case. Yeah. So anyway, we have a special guest on the line. We have the Republican Attorney General candidate or nominee. That his name is Adam Gregg. Adam, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Well, thank you. I'm proud to be here and I appreciate the opportunity.
Great. Well, hey, we always ask, first of all, with any candidate that comes on our radio program, why in the world do you want to run?
Well, you know, I'm actually really interested in public service. Just a little bit about my background to explain that. You know, I was, I started my professional career as a lawyer in private practice at a prominent law firm in Des Moines and had a great practice, was very happy, was on the partnership track and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But in my time in practice, I had some interactions with the governor's office. And in the fall of 2012, I got a call from the governor's office saying, hey, you know, we've been so impressed with your work. We'd like to have you switch sides of the table and come join our team. And so I became Governor Branstad and Lieutenant Governor Reynolds, one of their top advisors. I became their legislative liaison. So in that role, I was responsible for helping craft their budget and policy agenda and then working with the Iowa legislature to get it passed. And what attracted me about that job was just the opportunity for public service. Like I said, I was very content at the law firm. I could have had a very happy career there, could have had a very fulfilling career, but decided it was worth it to walk away and try my hand at serving the public. And that's kind of how this opportunity came along as well. I worked in the governor's office for 2 legislative sessions.
Mm-hmm.
During that time, we had some great success. The 2013 session in particular is considered one of the most successful in Iowa history. In that year, we did an education reform bill. We did an Iowa alternative to Obamacare's Medicaid expansion. We passed the largest tax cut in Iowa history. And, mm-hmm. you know, that was all just in one session.
Sure.
Most years, any one of those things would have been considered a major accomplishment. We got all 3 done. We did it in a split legislature. And so I felt like I had demonstrated success in public service and an ability to work across the aisle where appropriate to get major things done for Iowans.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw that nobody had decided to run against Tom Miller, I felt like there was a real opportunity there to increase my public service in a way that fit my experience, skills, and abilities. And I felt like politically there was an opportunity because I think it's going to be a good Republican year. And I certainly didn't want Tom Miller to go without having his feet held to the fire.
Sure. And it seems like he's been in his office for, like, ever.
Yeah,
he must be almost as old as me.
Not quite.
Well, I've had some people say that he's the eternal general rather than the attorney general.
nice.
And so his story is he was first elected in 1978. and he has served basically continuously with the exception of a 4-year period where he ran for the governor, did not get the Democratic nomination. So he went into private practice for 4 years and then 4 years later came back as the attorney general. So he first elected in 78, been in that office for 32 years, and he wants another 4.
That's incredible.
He's
been in office almost as long as I've been alive.
Well, I've forgotten
crazy.
About those 4 years that
he wasn't.
Was,
yeah. Yeah, so.
Well, you know, guys, for me, it's not about his age or my age. I mean, I pledged I'm not going to use his age against him in this race.
Provided he doesn't use yours against you, or because you're kind of a young guy, aren't you?
Yeah, but you know what? I happen to be about the same age as he was when he first ran for attorney general way back in the 1970s.
Okay.
So age itself isn't going to be an issue. What I'm asking Iowans to look at is not the length of our service, but the quality of our service. And if you look at what he's accomplished over the past 32 years, I've done this. I've asked Iowans all across the state, what's Tom Miller's legacy after 32 years?
Hmm.
A lot of people would say, first of all, who's Tom Miller? second of all, they most aren't able to pinpoint a single legacy. Those who do would say the tobacco settlement. And so the bottom line is,
yippee,
his legacy after 32 years is suing people.
Sure.
And his only idea for the next 4 years is suing more people.
Yeah, because I was going to say probably a little bit more positive spin on it, consumer advocacy. That's one thing I remember growing up. I remember, you know, that his office was really big on that, but that's not really all that he's supposed to be doing. Not that, I mean, obviously the attorney general should look out for Iowa consumers. But some things, I remember even the last election he had running against Brenna Finley, something that came out, and I don't know if he's still doing it, but is he still really receiving loans from his employees?
Well, when that happened in the last election, it happened really late, really towards the end. He borrowed, I think it was $90,000 from his staff. I have not seen any of that disclosed in this election cycle. But like I said, at this point in 2010, it hadn't happened yet either.
Great. You're on. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We've got Adam Gregg, Republican candidate for Attorney General, on with us. So Miller's problems are really legion. I mean, I've seen a number of the press releases your campaign has sent out, and it's just kind of mind-boggling, some of the things that he has done. Just, for instance, you know, this latest news, he missed a filing deadline, or deadline for filing charges, felony charges, in a kidnapping case in Sac County.
Yeah, it's unreal. Well, I mean, first, let me just say, you may remember in the 2010 election that Brenna Finley made an issue of he had missed some deadlines which allowed sexual predators to get out earlier than they otherwise would have.
Well, so this is a pattern.
And at that time, he said, well, this will happen from time to time. You know, we'll make sure it doesn't happen again. Well, guess what? It happened again. Let me tell you the story behind this, because you're going to think it comes from a John Grisham novel or something like that, but this happened in Iowa, in Sac County. And it's the story of Raphael Trevino, who was a migrant farm worker, came to Iowa just for a couple weeks in the summer of 2012 to detassel corn and send the extra money down to his family in Texas. And some guys didn't like him. And so one night he was stepping out on his back porch to make a phone call to back home. The guys threw him in the back of their truck, drove him out to the edge of town, beat the living daylights out of him, and basically left him for dead. Those three guys got off completely scot-free because the Attorney General's office failed to file the charges within the three-year statute of limitations.
Okay, well, surely it's because, you know, he was just overloaded with, you know, cases, right? And he was busy in court, and
for the sake of Iowans, I wish that were the case.
He's a busy guy.
We had the opportunity to review his calendars, and we found that in the days leading up to that, he was actually spending his time out in Washington, D.C., which in and of itself isn't something that's bad per se.
Sure.
But when you put it in the context of the fact that those were two of over 100 days that he has spent in Washington, D.C. since President Obama has been elected, you start to wonder if he's still Iowa's lawyer or if he's become President Obama's lawyer.
I told you he was a busy guy.
Yeah, what's he doing out there? Is he trying to get another job or what?
Well, you know, I always wonder if he's holding out for some kind of appointment or something like that. During those 100 days, it was a wide variety of things. Sometimes it's meeting with top-level Obama administration officials. In this particular case, he was attending board meetings of the Legacy Foundation. And what the Legacy Foundation is, if you don't know, from that tobacco settlement in the mid-90s, basically part of that settlement was that the tobacco companies would fund a nonprofit foundation that would be dedicated to anti-smoking efforts. And so when you see, I think they used to operate Just Eliminate Lives, and I think the name has changed since then. But when you see some of these anti-smoking ads, it's the Legacy Foundation that's doing it. The interesting thing about it is, so you've got this Legacy Foundation that is funded by the tobacco companies, who Tom Miller claims to hold accountable, but yet on their dime, he's traveling to Washington, D.C. regularly, traveling to, you know, resort-type locations for board meetings of the Legacy Foundation. Again, almost kind of like something out of a novel.
Well, you also wrote, or you sent out a press release a little while ago saying Tom Miller has his head stuck in the sand on the immigration issue. What's that all about?
Well, so you may have heard something about ICE detainers. And what I mean by that is Immigration and Customs Enforcement. But let me give you just a fact scenario. Let's say somebody gets picked up by the local cops for maybe it's a serious offense, maybe it's not. And they're in jail, and Immigration and Customs Enforcement becomes aware of who that person is. And they think it may be somebody who is an illegal immigrant. And in most cases, this is somebody who ICE thinks is so bad that they need to be deported.
Mm-hmm.
So what ICE will do in those situations is they will issue what's called a detainer order, basically telling the local law enforcement officials that they should hold that person for an extra 48 hours so ICE can complete their research and come and pick that person up so they can potentially be deported.
Okay.
And so these are, like I said, these are folks who have committed serious enough. These aren't your run-of-the-mill criminals. These are folks who have done something serious enough that ICE wants to come get them. Now, remember, this is the Obama administration's ICE.
True.
Okay? So when
they're not as motivated, it seems like.
Exactly. So in the circumstances where they're motivated, that tells you the kind of folks that we're dealing with in these cases. Well, so Tom Miller, we discovered, his office sent out some guidance to county attorneys, basically telling them to throw open the jailhouse doors and release these potentially dangerous illegal immigrants. And basically saying that, well, if it turns out that this person was not an illegal immigrant, or is not the person they thought that this person was, that there could be some potential civil liability for continuing to hold them.
Wow.
Well, he based that on a single case in Oregon, when there are numerous cases throughout the country that hold exactly the opposite way.
So he did some extensive research.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man.
Well, here's the interesting thing. The case that they cite to in Oregon actually cites to all the other cases that decide the other way.
Wow. Wow.
And they didn't even mention that in their legal memorandum to county attorney.
Yeah, we're running out of time. I just want to ask you real quick, why should Iowans, I mean, a lot of times Iowans do not focus on these down ballot races. Why is this one important?
Well,
real quick.
You bet. It's time we had an attorney general who served as Iowa's lawyer instead of President Obama's lawyer. He sides with the Obama administration every opportunity he gets, whether it's at the U.S. Supreme Court or failing to push back on rules and regulations which could harm Iowa businesses and Iowa farmers. We need somebody who's going to stand up for Iowans in whatever jurisdiction they're threatened. Our current attorney general isn't doing that. I will do that. I'll be accessible. I've already traveled all 99 counties, and I'll do it every single year after I'm elected.
Awesome. Where can they find out more about you?
AdamGregg.com, that's G-R-E-G-G, or on Facebook at Greg for A-G, or on Twitter at AdamGregg16.
Adam Gregg, best of luck to you. Thank you for coming on. We appreciate it. These down-ballot races, folks, very important. Make sure that, well, I'd say, you know, I'll just say go out, vote Republican, because frankly, there isn't a single Democrat out there that's worth it. Anyway,
thanks, Adam.
That's my partisan comment of the day. Thank you, Adam. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
Marv, the boxes are packed and ready to move, but what about the appliances?
No problem, Alice.
Marv, I think you're going to need a couple of guys to help.
I've got it all worked out. I'll just lower this refrigerator down the stairs.
Whether you're moving across town, downtown, up, down, or back again, give us a call and we'll send you a couple of guys. Hi, I'm Brian Myers with M&A Moving and Hauling. Don't be like Marv and Alice. When it's time for you to move to your new home or office space, M&A Moving and Hauling can help. We have what it takes to move your belongings safely and securely to their new location. Give us a call and we'll send you a couple of guys. 515-490-2640. That's 490-2640. M&A Moving and Hauling, 490-2640. Or online at acoupleofguys.net.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Hey, we're back. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio with Shane Vanderhart and Brian Myers, and we have a special guest in our studio, Dr. Lee Heeb. And we decided we wanted to talk about Ebola, because we have not had a chance to talk about that. It's even though it's been in the news, it's becoming, you know, kind of scary. We're seeing more and more people exposed, medical staff who have actually come down with it. People are saying protocols were followed, but then we're finding out protocols, well, they need to work on their protocols if protocols were followed. So anyway, I wanted
to... The first thing you got to do is welcome the good doctor.
Oh, yes. Welcome, Dr. Heeb.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
First of all, what should we think about? I mean, CDC was saying, hey, don't worry about Ebola. It's okay. It's not easily transmittable.
Well, and let me just say, the CDC is filled with very competent, good doctors and people that really research this stuff. Unfortunately, their leadership is not among that group. You know, you cannot trust somebody who in one breath says, you can't get it from somebody next to you on the bus. Oh, but don't get on the bus if you might have it because you might transmit it to somebody.
No.
I remember saying
it's not easily transferable unless it's through bodily fluid.
And all this is
saliva, you know. It's like, this is how common, I mean, really.
Oh, yeah, I know. This is the common core of medicine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I was thinking the common cold.
Oh, I'm thinking common cold.
You know, if I sneeze on you. Yeah.
Well, and let's be clear about this. First of all, I think a 10th grader could figure the logical fallacy of what the head of the CDC just said. And, oh, by the way, you know that this is the guy who brought out Bloomberg's program to limit your cola-sized drinks. And I think he still thinks that's more deadly to our children than having people wander around the streets with Ebola. Yeah. But here's the real point, and I wrote this. I'm just writing this for WorldNet Daily. You know, there's a lot of disinformation. First of all, this is not truly airborne. Airborne diseases are like smallpox. Smallpox mm-hmm. travels through vents. It can, in the last known case of smallpox in Europe, somebody breathed out their breath out a window in a German hospital, and it went down the wall and up another wall into another wing of the hospital and killed 6 student nurses. Now, that's airborne, okay?
Yeah.
And that's a very deadly disease. And that's why, you know, one of the reasons I'm here is because I give talks on bioterrorism and, you know, and I've been talking about smallpox. Well, anyway. So here's the issue. It's also not bloodborne. As you know, I think our president was thinking AIDS when he said you can't get it on a bus. He wants to make sure that nobody's discriminated against. Well, it's true. You can't get AIDS from somebody sitting next to him on the bus because it's truly a bloodborne disease, meaning I have to literally get your blood and inject it to myself or scratch it on my skin or put it in some kind of area where it reaches capillary blood at least. Semen, yes, but it's a little harder, okay? But this is a different story. Ebola is droplet. So it's you cough, the unusual part, and the reason these are called these hemorrhagic fevers is once you're infected and the virus replicates, it comes out in everything. See, AIDS virus you don't normally have in the serum in your eye in any infectious way. I don't think there's ever been a known transmission from tears, for example. Not true with Ebola. Ebola comes out in your pores, in your tears, in your vomit, everything you've got going, sweat. So the problem is I can just touch you and get it. Yeah. And that is a highly contagious disease.
So it's right there on your skin.
It's right there. And here's the other problem. You know, there are some diseases that take a lot of germs to get sick with. You know, salmonella we worry about with, you know, professional poultry processors and stuff. Okay, you need to have like 100,000 germs of salmonella. Even if I ingested one salmonella germ, I'm not going to get salmonella dysentery. But Shigella, another dysentery disease, one germ will do it. And unfortunately, Ebola falls into that category where these things are these long filamentous fiber-like mm-hmm. viruses, and it doesn't take much. So we have 16 doctors now of Doctors Without Borders over there, that 9 of whom are dead from this, 16 infected. You know, Dr. Arnold, one kind of a bright bulb in the box of very smart people about this, said the other day that he knows doctors that just got it and died from touching another patient. So this is a highly infectious disease, but not airborne. And I don't, you know, this. Let's forget worrying about that right now. I mean, the CDC can worry about that in theory, but this has never been seen to mutate. Having said that, this is a new strain, and we've never had it in the human. You know, usually this burns out so quickly in remote jungle villages that we haven't had a chance.
Well,
to
Well, usually even the death rate's usually been higher than what has been with this particular strain, right?
Yeah, although you know the jury's out yet on this, but this looks to be about 50 to 60% fatal. Whereas in the past there've been some outbreaks that've been 90% fatal. But again, you know there are other factors that go into fatality: the health of the population, their access to medical care. Those people were in totally remote villages.
Yeah.
But I think the other point to be made about Ebola is that we have no treatment. You know, when they say they're coming here for treatment, for the most part, it's supportive treatment. It's to keep you, you know, and it's your immune system that has to fight this off. We don't have a vaccine in the pipeline. We don't really have any hope right now of converting. We're certainly not going to make Liberia a first world medical facility overnight or a first world country. And so the key to stopping this kind of contagion is stopping transmission. And the way you stop transmission is stop transportation, the one thing our government seems to be hesitant to do.
Well, let me ask a question here since there does seem to be some misinformation out there. With regard to what we've been told in connection with when somebody is contagious. Remember, we were told that until the infected individual starts being symptomatic, you didn't have to worry.
Well,
speak to that.
Well, I'm going to tell you, one of the problems we have in medicine, at least among these leaders, and I think in general in our medical profession, and I'm probably guilty of it too, is not, you know, he knoweth not that he knoweth not. Unfortunately, we need to be honest about the unknowns here. There are a couple unknowns. One is when they actually start spreading the virus. I mean, it's actually true that the more you're symptomatic, the more viral load you have, the more infectious you are. But when it exactly starts, I don't think we know. We also don't know about how long it remains live on fomites, fomites being inanimate objects that transmit disease. So, you know, Duncan goes to the emergency room and he signed into the emergency room, probably chewed on the pen, touched the arms of the chair. So, you know, think about when you go to the emergency room, what do? You know, you sit next to people.
I don't chew on the pen.
Okay, well, you know, I'm in the habit, I guess. Okay. But, you know, he grabbed the styrofoam cup from the coffee dispenser. Who knows what he did? We don't know how long that virus lasts on those inanimate objects. I've heard between 3 and 10 days. I've heard 2 hours. I mean, that's one of those unknowns we really don't know at this point. And so until we know those things, we got issues.
Sure. So you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We have Dr. Lee Heeb with us in studio talking about Ebola. So. Yeah, Ron's joining me with that.
That was the echo.
I wish I am the one that came up with that, but I found that as I find a lot of fascinating things on the interwebs. So, anyway, we're talking about how worried really should we be as a country? Can we end up seeing an outbreak like what we've seen in West Africa? I would think that we're probably more, I mean, since we're so crammed together and we constantly have contact with tons of people every day, it seems like the risk of a major massive outbreak of Ebola, now that it's here, seems, you know, very high.
Well, certainly, I mean, there's two levels here. There's one of the inadvertent spread. So you could have, you know, like the Eric Duncan problem, where we still are holding our breath, I think, collectively, to see how many people pop up with it that have been along his path. And then you have people that knowingly want to spread something, you know, and we've seen that in other outbreaks and you know, we got bad guys out there that want to do it. We don't know. That kind of thing could cause it to get away. And you know, people say you're a libertarian. Quarantine isn't a very libertarian position. Actually, it is, because you don't have the right to go around with a revolver with one bullet in it. Even if you don't shoot somebody, if you're just going around playing Russian roulette with people on the sidewalk, you don't have the right to do that.
Sure.
Unfortunately, with this Ebola virus, you know, in the old days of smallpox, which is probably the last, I mean, that's the one we, as an endemic, we used to have smallpox in America. It was a major contagion, and it was deadly. And people knew, but there was a general consensus. We didn't have the CDC and big government agencies dealing with this, but there was a general consensus among physicians, hospitals, and patients how you dealt with it. When a patient got sick, he did not go to the hospital, because he knew that that just spread it to everybody else. He stayed in his home. They, you know, put out the quarantine flag or called somebody, and the doctor went to them. And that's how contagion should be taken care of. And there is a potential for this getting away. I honestly think we're gonna take care of it in America, but we can't do it unless we get serious about it and understand that when you don't have a treatment that really works for a disease and you can easily overload the system, you have to stop transmission by stopping transportation.
Another question for you. In August, and I think really it wasn't just the CDC, we were also hearing this at other levels of government, but in August they were telling us that this was a disease that – basically they said, don't worry, this is a disease which doesn't spread particularly easily. And, of course, now here we are in October and they're saying, well, you know, that wasn't quite true. My question to you is – was this something that those guys knew and they told the American people this simply to keep them from panicking or for some other, you know, reason? Or did they literally not understand what you just said a few moments ago, which is that you could get this through some fairly casual contact?
Well, clearly there are people that do understand that and did understand it back then. You know, I'm not a psychiatrist to speak to the motivations of our political leaders, so-called leaders. But you know, either they – I mean, it's one of the two. I suspect that they just – you know, I got to tell you, there is a – look what's happening in Texas right now. There's a liberal student group that is asking for – they're calling it – what did I just read? They're having an Ebola equality – thing going around.
No.
Sign. It was in Austin. Sign this to demand that they bring Liberian patients here and we house them and treat them for free.
Oh.
And because it's otherwise to do it is racist. Now, so the point I'm going to say is that your motivation is your health and the health of your children. There's a bunch of people who have a motivation that is political, that has nothing to do. And until they are actually affected, they're not going to recognize the damage. They just don't believe it. Because to believe that there's really – you know, to believe in this, some people I think, to believe in it says, oh, maybe that the people that told us there were bad guys out there were right. You know, and I think that there's a liberal bias, normalcy bias here not to believe that these things are really bad. This is not a scare tactic. This is a bad deal.
Now, instead of closing down transportation, President Obama wants to send National Guard and Reserve troops over to West Africa to help contain it. Okay, we'll tie in your running for governor.
Yes.
If you were the governor,
I would not send our troops there.
Okay. And there's already been a state Senate candidate, Sean Dietz, who did an open letter to Governor Branstad urging him not to send troops to West Africa. Why is this a bad idea?
Well, it's a bad idea for several reasons.
Duh.
First of all, I worry about the troops. Because,
talk to me like I'm a liberal, basically.
Yeah, okay. You know, again, just on random chance alone, you'd think they'd do something in the interest of our national security. And when you really look at our national security, let's look at the big picture here. Our standing army, where are they? Well, they're being chewed up over in Afghanistan and for nebulous reasons. And we've opened our borders to all sorts of comers, all sorts of bad guys. And now we're going to take our home security force and send it over to be infected. I find that a little bit suspicious. Second thing, I mean, or just bad security.
Sure.
It's bad for our security. The second thing is, how are you going to support the troops? When I was in the Navy, we did it with amphib ships off to Liberia. We did it for the amphib ships. I can't think of a worse situation than medevacing people, active duty people, to an amphib ship with a bullet. There's just no way to contain it on an amphib ship.
No, I know. Wow.
And if you have to bring them back to the United States, we only have 4 biocontainment hospitals. So you're going to overwhelm our system at some
point.
Sure.
And I'm just – well, and also, too, having served in the National Guard, I know there's probably been more training on biowarfare.
But this is not something
they're equipped to do. This is not their job.
We're not equipped to do it, as you can see, in our own hospitals.
They're supposed to, you know, they're trained to destroy things and kill people.
Right.
Basically.
And honestly, it never is good to send troops for nebulous purposes. Somebody described to me the actual function, the purpose, and the logistical support for this. I haven't heard any of those things yet. But the other side of it is, If these highly trained physicians and nurses cannot protect themselves from the disease, don't think that Lance Corporal Smith is going to protect himself from the disease.
True.
And the other bit of disinformation here is, and then I'll hopefully get to the point about how they, in my opinion, how they should really be handling this in Liberia, why we don't need our troops over there. But here's another bit of disinformation. We keep hearing that these nurses are well gowned and gloved. But they're not. They don't have the right protective gear, and we'll get into that.
And we're going to keep Lee Hebe over for segment 3. This continue on with this conversation. This is Shane Vanner with Brian Myers. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be right back.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Marv, the boxes are packed and ready to move, but what about the appliances?
No problem, Alice.
Marv, I think you're going to need a couple of guys to help.
I've got it all worked out. I'll just lower this refrigerator down the stairs.
Whether you're moving across town, downtown, up down, or back again, give us a call and we'll send you a couple of guys. Hi, I'm Brian Myers with M&A Moving and Hauling. Don't be like Marv and Alice. When it's time for you to move to your new home or office space, M&A Moving and Hauling can help. We have what it takes to move your belongings safely and securely to their new location. Give us a call and we'll send you a couple of guys. 515-490-2640. That's 490-2640. M&A Moving and Hauling, 490-2640. Or online at acoupleofguys.net.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart, Brian Myers, and in studio we have Dr. Lee Heap. We were talking about Ebola, and I could tell she had a lot more to say, so we wanted to keep her over. We didn't want to cut her short. This is an important topic. I know a lot of people are really concerned about it, and we were talking about President Obama's bright idea of sending, I use that word bright very loosely,
sarcasm,
sending troops over, National Guard troops and reserve troops over to West Africa to help contain Ebola, because this is what they're trained to do, is fight, you know, bacteria and viruses. So how would you handle it?
Well, I mean, I was going to say something about the first of all, the what we have to wear to protect ourselves. And this is one of the problems, is that they told us these nurses got it even though they were wearing protective garb. But keep in mind, what they were doing, and this whole idea of protocols and everything, what we're designed to do in America is to try and prevent moving staph and Pseudomonas from patient to patient. We don't even do a completely good job at that. And what do our garb consist of? It's paper gowns, latex gloves, a non-occlusive mask with a spray shield, and maybe paper booties. That is not what they use at Fort Detrick or these places that are level 4 containment facilities. They have – because here's the problem. It's when you take the stuff off is when you contaminate yourself. You know, at a real biocontainment facility, in a real biohazmat suit, you get a washdown, a decontamination unit, and then you take the suit off. And so here's the problem. When you send our troops over to Africa, you know, what are they going to go with? And if they think they're protected with paper gowns and latex gloves, do you not think the physicians and nurses over there have those things?
Exactly.
Our American physicians did.
Well, and they have mop suits, but the mop suits aren't designed for this.
Right. And here's the problem. Having been in the military, the problem is when climactic conditions get so oppressive, you simply can't function in the mop gear. What do? You take it off.
Exactly. And it's that having worn that, I couldn't even imagine having to wear that in Africa.
You really can't function in that
horrible
stuff. And that's one of the – you know, I was on the Navy Research Advisory Committee for a number of years. And one of the things I learned about that in high-level military planning is that when there are problems that are just – don't have a solution, you tend not to talk about them. You know, I mean, this is a problem. We've always known that chemical and biological warfare is a problem, that not a great solution. But again, here's what I would – if I could be king for a day, here's what I would do in Liberia. Maybe that's the way they work over there too. I don't know. But, you know, first of all, it should be noted that other countries with a lot less theoretical – you know, they, without our 500 congressmen and things, have figured out to shut their own borders, like Santa Lucia, the Caribbean island, and the African nations bordering on Liberia and Guinea and Sierra Leone have shut their borders. I mean, good thinking. Transportation. So what you do is
– we can't do that.
I know. Liberia needs to own this. If they really – because it's not – quite frankly – we're so afraid of stopping transportation, we're letting people die. It's more compassionate to stop the transportation and stop the disease and not kill millions of people.
Exactly.
So how you do it is you – and this is not my idea. This is the classic – go back to the 1930s, the 1830s. This is how you stop contagion. You have rings and you stop them within the ring and you narrow the ring down until you know that all the contagion is in that ring, hot zones. So Liberia needs to be closed down. It doesn't mean we can't drop off supplies or technical expertise. And what the international community needs to do is offer food supplies and biohazmat suits and technical expertise. But the Liberians need to own the ground. They need to control the population. It's their people. And what they need to do is stop transportation in their country between towns. Once you have an area that you know is free, you can let people go back and do their life.
Yeah.
But the areas that are still in under contagion lockdown, they're under lockdown. People stay in their houses, and people bring food to you. People bring medical care to you. If you have a system for, you know, if you have a problem, you put a flag out, something. Because if you don't do that, this is going to keep roaring. But it'll stop in 2 months if you did that, because it'll burn out. There's no way we can make them a first world medical facility or a first world country overnight. So quite frankly, the people that are going to die are going to die. The people that are going to live are going to live. And we're probably not going to affect that, except we can make it worse by letting people transmit.
Absolutely.
The folks I saw on television just the other day, there are some folks down in Liberia that are surviving this particular
yes.
dreadful disease. Now, my question to you is, what are they doing for those folks that is helpful in that regard? What kinds of things are they able to do that some of these folks are surviving the disease?
Well, I mean, it's your immune system. So in the absence of any other medical intervention, the people that are going to survive are the people that are immunologically competent and able and healthy. You know, they're well-nourished probably. And, you know, one of the things – let me just tell you, vitamin D levels make a big difference in all
sure.
this. It turns out the Japanese did a study, and they showed that your chance of getting influenza is more – influenced by your vitamin D level than whether or not you had the vaccine. In other words, the vaccine is not as good as having a good vitamin D level. I personally keep my vitamin D level up. That's my choice of how to not get the flu. But it's just probably the same thing here, because vitamin D improves your immune capability because it improves your DNA. It actually heals the telomeres of your DNA. So having a high vitamin D level is probably going to turn out to be one of those things. But they're immune. Some people, you know, it's like some people don't get colds and other
sure.
people get them. You know, some people survive gastroenteritis and other people die.
Couple questions. Just the thought came to me. First of all, it just occurred to me a lot of our listeners may not know what exactly is Ebola? What does it do
okay,
to
well,
a person?
Ebola is a virus, and viruses are not impacted by antibiotics. Unless you have polio is a virus. We have a vaccine for polio. We don't have a vaccine for Ebola. Ebola is an unusual looking virus. It looks like a shoelace.
Sure.
And it's a hemorrhagic fever. It causes you to start hemorrhaging from all your body orifices. It just kind of melts your cells. When Ebola's been around for a long time, but it was always in these deep jungle villages, and it would attack a village because they didn't have a lot of transportation.
The
village would just die out.
Yeah.
I mean, and there were probably villages that died out we never heard about. And what happened is that and we've been looking for years to try and find the animal vector or however the virus is actually stored in some way in between human outbreaks. In other words, they've looked at bat guano, they've looked at all sorts of things, and it might be in animals that don't get symptomatic themselves but run around and have the virus transmitted to humans. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the story. Well, then we paved the Kinshasa Highway and we paved these roads into the jungle so now people can travel. In this particular outbreak, people got sick in a village, and a doctor from an 82-mile-away place came in and helped them, and he traveled 82 miles, and he's the one that brought the virus out to this other town.
Oh,
and from there, it traveled out to the coast.
Wow.
So then it got into the airline system, and that's where it really is a problem. I mean, you know, again, why did the hot – you know, we should have been right on top of this. Now, we knew that this Ebola thing was going on in West Africa. The one thing I fault the CDC for and our government for is they weren't prepared to deal with it aggressively. I mean, they might have said, okay, this could happen, and then what will you do? But they didn't really have – so now we have good thinking people saying we need attack teams that go out, these rapid response teams
sure.
that will go to you. It's not about protocols. A protocol is a piece of paper that I hand to you. If I hand you a protocol on how to do something, that doesn't mean anything. You need equipment, training, experience, and leadership, all of which are lacking.
But Lee, now we're hearing the real reason, the real person to blame for this. Well, it would be the Republicans because they cut
budget
the CDC
cuts.
Budget.
Yeah.
Actually, what did I just read? That's just not true. Their budget went up.
Okay.
You know, the CDC budget for this went up. That's just disinformation.
I read a piece in Red State that was
kind
of hilarious.
Yeah, it's like their budget's $300 million
more.
So
your Ebola money went to fat lesbians, basically.
Well, the way I understand it, I know we're running short on time, the way I understand it is over a 10-year period, their budget either doubled or tripled. But we're into this what is a cut thing, you know, with the baseline budgeting and everything.
Right.
So, the dollars they get every year keep going up.
Yeah.
But people still say the budget got cut.
Exactly. And they don't prioritize. And Ebola has not been a priority. And on one hand, I can understand why, because it's not something – again, it's been contained to remote jungle villages, so why do we need to worry about it?
Well,
here
we
in the
need
United States?
Needed to worry about it because of a bioterrorist act.
Absolutely.
And honestly, this should be a wake up call to realize. You know, Hassemi Rafsanjani said years ago. He said, "Biologic warfare, bioweapons are the poor man's atomic bomb, and we should consider this." We know that that all these different countries have had bioweapons, so it's an issue that we should have been paying attention to.
All right, where can people learn more about you? Want to give you a quick plug?
Oh yeah, www.heeb, H-I-E-B, for those trained before Common Core, it's I before E, so it's heeb2014.org. And
nice.
Thought you'd like that.
Great.
heeb2014.org.
This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Marv, the boxes are packed and ready to move, but what about the appliances?
No problem, Alice.
Marv, I think you're going to need a couple of guys to help.
I've got it all worked out. I'll just lower this refrigerator down the stairs.
Whether you're moving across town, downtown, up down, or back again, give us a call and we'll send you a couple of guys. Hi, I'm Brian Myers with M&A Moving and Hauling. Don't be like Marv and Alice. When it's time for you to move to your new home or office space, M&A Moving and Hauling can help. We have what it takes to move your belongings safely and securely to their new location. Give us a call and we'll send you a couple of guys. 515-490-2640. That's 490-2640. M&A Moving and Hauling, 490-2640. Or online at acoupleofguys.net.
Welcome back, Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by M&A Moving and Hauling, serving all of Central Iowa for your moving needs. Call 515-490-2640, and they'll send you a couple of guys. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers. We've had a packed show, but
it's been a great show.
We had to talk a little bit about one of our favorite people, Stacey Apple. Brian asked to talk. He was begging to talk about Stacey Apple. He just loves her so much.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't exactly begging to talk about Stacey Apple.
Okay.
Certainly not in a positive way. But no, look, did I tell you that she's a mother with six kids?
Oh, I didn't know that.
I just wanted you to know.
Thank you.
You know, a lot of people don't know that. She's a mother with six kids. No, she's been really from the get-go, she's been talking about raising the minimum wage. She, is upset about companies that are allegedly shipping jobs overseas. That phrase just makes me crazy.
Mm.
And I know we have a very limited time in this segment.
It just reminds me of a Chaz Allen commercial for Iowa Democratic Party. They'll send jobs to China.
Yeah.
So,
well, look, I got one or two anecdotes I want to try to get out real quick. First
sure.
of all, with respect to minimum wage, these things are not the kind of thing that you can just wave a magic wand and all of a sudden there'll be money aplenty, to be giving to people with regard to their
Democrats
hourly
believe
wages.
In the money tree.
But, when I was at Eagle Sign years ago, we used to do a lot of lean manufacturing kinds of emphasis in our production. We did Kaizen events. I don't know if anybody's, familiar with all that, but we were involved in a training exercise at Pella Windows on lean manufacturing and Kaizen. And a fascinating thing came up during our training. They said when Pella Windows first started out, and I suspect that this was the way it was with a lot of companies, they developed the selling price by taking their cost and putting on their desired margin. You'd add those two together, and that would be your selling price. And then he said, lo and behold, then years later, something changed. There was a downturn in the housing market and there was competition. And so guess what? The market determined the selling price.
Hmm.
So then Pella said from that point forward, they had to change their model. Instead of having cost plus margin equals selling price, they had to start off with a selling price which had been established by the market, and then they had to beat the daylights out of cost. Failure to do that, and a lot of companies failed, failure to do that meant that those companies would be out of business because they would not be able to be competitive in the marketplace. This is not all that hard to understand.
Well, if you're liberal, it is.
Well, apparently so. You know, shipping jobs overseas, she's, you know, talking about that. That makes me crazy, too. I used to be affiliated with a company that was an electronics manufacturer, and they made guitar amplifiers. And when they started out, they were building them domestically. But then we found out that the price point to the music store in a certain amplifier class had to be $100. $100, that's where we had to be. Well, you couldn't build it in the United States and sell it to a music store for $100. It was impossible. And so eventually we started having the stuff, all of the components were made over in China, brought into this country, assembled and tested here. It's not like we laid awake nights saying, what can we do to put it to the Americans here?
It
wasn't like that.
No, those greedy capitalists.
We wanted to stay in business.
They love money.
So because
more
we wanted
America.
To stay in business, we ended up having to outsource some of these components from China. And it's a problem throughout manufacturing in this country. And it's not just people being evil and greedy and wicked and blah, 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 blah. These are economic factors that we have to take into consideration.
Sure. So, anyway.
Stacy doesn't get that.
No, she doesn't get a lot of things. We don't really
She's
have
not going to get my vote, I'll tell you that.
We don't have time in this segment to really get into all that Stacy Apple doesn't understand. But anyway, just keep that in mind. She's just not a bright person.
Well, anyway. Our quote of the day is from Augustine. Faith is to believe what we do not see, and the reward of this faith is to see what we believe.
This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio with Shane Vanderhart and Brian Myers. We'll see you next week.
See you, everybody.